This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. In today's program, we'll have the latest developments in the case of the murder of Trayvon Martin, as well as a visit to the Sunday rally held in Sanford, Florida, on his behalf. And we'll also be speaking with intelligence analyst Ray McGovern on clandestine and potential military operations in regard to Iran, as well as the latest developments regarding Afghanistan. All of that and more coming up on today's 5 o'clock shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, and the latest developments are coming rapidly out of Florida. Among them today, the attorney for the parents of Trayvon Martin are explicitly asking the Justice Department to review a Central Florida prosecutor's interactions and perhaps interference and stifling of the case regarding the arrest of the shooter of Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman. There is a two-week-old federal investigation into the matter, and FBI agents are now said to be interrogating people in Florida about the incident. And that investigation began on the 19th of March. But the family is going further than just a generic investigation. They're asking for specific investigation of interference by the state attorney, Norm Wolfinger, and the interaction between the DA's office and the Sanford Police Department, including particularly Detective Chris Serino. The attorney for the family, Benjamin Crump, said that he is filing a formal request to the Justice Department today, saying, quote, "Within hours of the shooting in which Trayvon Martin was killed, the Sanford Chief of Police, Bill Lee, met with the state attorney, Norm Wolfinger. We also believe that family members of the shooter, George Zimmerman, were present at the police department. It was further revealed that the state attorney, Norm Wolfinger, and the chief of police, Bill Lee, overruled the recommendation of the lead homicide investigator, Chris Serino, who recommended that George Zimmerman be arrested for manslaughter for the killing of Trayvon Martin." The letter goes on to say that Serino filed an affidavit on the night of his first investigation of the scene, saying that he did not find George Zimmerman's statements credible and that he should have been arrested. But that was overturned by the DA. It is perhaps relevant that the father of George Zimmerman, Robert Zimmerman, is a judge and may or may not have had some influence in regard to the decisions made by the DA and the police department. Meanwhile, over the weekend, there was a rally held in Sanford, Florida, attended by thousands and convened by the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And among those who spoke at that event were Benjamin Jealous, the president of the NAACP, as well as Rosalind Brock, who was the chair of the board.
Look at the thousands all around you here. Buses have come from all across the state of Florida and throughout this region. We are drawn here to Sanford because we have been so deeply moved by the slaying of Trayvon Martin. My friends, I've come home to Florida because I grew up right down the road in Fort Pierce, Florida, not too far from here. And from the first time that I learned of Trayvon Martin's terrible murder, I felt a deep connection to him, to his family, to his story, and to this state. And so today, the entire world grieves with us. At the NAACP, we literally receive thousands and thousands of messages from all corners of our nation. What the messages say are this: that Trayvon could have been our son, our brother, our cousin, and our friend. Because, my friends, how many times must young black men in this country have to walk through a community under the threat of suspicion while walking while black? How many mothers, particularly black mamas, have to send their sons into the world with a hope that is tempered with fear, knowing that in this world, in 2012, that somebody in a neighborhood can treat her son as if he is a potential threat and not the loving son that she raised him to be? How long must we wait? Trayvon's murderer has moved us deeply. It has moved us to anger and some of us to fear. But this day, we come here to Samson. It's been 34 days since Trayvon was murdered. The NAACP has been on the ground from day one. We're here because the outrageousness of the police department when they did not arrest George Zimmerman on the evening of February 26th. They essentially placed the burden of proof on a dead young man who could not speak for himself. How long must we wait? Trayvon's murder, he was a victim of two practices. I don't have to tell my brothers what those practices are, but my friends, we've gathered here today to grieve with Trayvon's family. But I want to ask you to do something else from me. I want you to confront your anger, confront your fear, and turn that anger and that fear into something constructive, because our young people are watching you. Courage will not skip this generation. And so as we come, week after week, day after day, hour after hour, calling for justice in this town, I've got to tell you this, my friends. Marches, rallies, and speeches are fine. But what are you going to do, Sanford, at election time? Now is the time. We've got to seize this opportunity to make a visible, sustainable, and real change right here. Now let me tell you something. Come right here. Come on up in here. What I want to tell you is this. I want everybody, all of yous, I want you to go out. Register, Miss Spencer. Register and what?
Vote.
What you gonna do?
Vote.
What?
Vote.
What?
Vote.
What?
Vote.
Before you can vote, what do you have to do?
Register.
And then what?
Vote.
Because with your vote, your vote is the key that will unlock justice in this community. Because it is with your vote that we can demand that neighborhood watchmen are trained to protect and defend and not kill our sons in the community. With your vote, you can demand that those whose job it is to investigate this crime will do their job. With your vote, you can say, not on my watch, not on my watch will I allow another black boy, white boy, brown boy, red boy, any boy in this community to be racially profiled. Because we're all God's children. Look where God has brought us. See how far we've come. Not what we ought to be. But we thank God that we're not what we used to be. Y'all ought to be shouting up in here right now. But my friends, think in 4 short days, on April the 4th, this nation will pause to commemorate the untimely death of another man named Martin. You know this man, a leader, a slain leader, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was gunned down senselessly because of the color of his skin. But my friends, in times like these, we must forever remember the words of Dr. King when he said that apathy is not an option. For in times like these, the great tragedy is not the strident clamor of the bad people. It is what? The silence of the good people. Anybody listening? Does anybody care? It is not about those who are clamoring all over the place, but it's about the good people in this town, white and black, who are working together to bring justice. We need to hear those voices to come to the forefront. We can't wait any longer. And I challenge you today to come together in unity as one community here in Sanford, to unite together to speak truth to power. For now is the time for justice for Trayvon Martin. Now is the time for the city manager to stop hiding behind bureaucratic red tape and task forces. You may look like us, but you ought to show some sign. Now is the time for the state attorney general to declare and secure an arrest for Mr. George Zimmerman. Now is the time that we have to declare that there is a new sheriff in town. There's a new sheriff in town. And that sheriff's name is Justice. 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 When do we want it? When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Justice.
When do we want it?
Now.
My friends, the future stands in front of you. Courage cannot skip this generation. The future is calling. And with your help, the NAACP will answer. What are you going to do for me? I can't hear you. What? 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 Please never forget that your vote is your key that unlocks the future. Thank you and God bless. Courage will not skip this generation.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for standing out here and braving this coming rainstorm. You know, we're the NAACP and we're used to storms. Ladies and gentlemen, let me hear you say, Trayvon's the last one. Trayvon's the last one. Trayvon's the last one. Trayvon's the last one. That is the message for this department here today. That is the message for our community today. It is time that we save our sons. It is time that we end racial profiling. And it is time for George Zimmerman to be brought to justice. So when you, I won't keep you long because it's gonna start raining on all of us. And like most of you, I ain't got a raincoat. But when you go home today and they say, what was this about? Say, we were there to make sure that Trayvon's killer was brought to justice. And when you go home today and they say, well, what do we do now? saying, do you belong to the Urban League? Do you belong to the National Action Network? Do you belong to National Council of La Raza, the National Organization of Women, or a union, or the NAACP? And if they say no, he said, then join something. And if you don't know what to join, join the NAACP. And if you want to be part of a century-long fight for justice with the baddest batting average in the country, join the NAACP. Because there are two types of power in this country. There is organized money, pushing these crazy stand-your-ground laws across the country, and there's organized people fighting back. And if you ain't one or the other, your power is real weak. So we got to get organized. And then they'll say to him, and then what do we do? In this year of all years, we need to register as many people to vote as possible. And when they say why, well, that brother on the corner says, well, why should I register to vote? Say, well, son, if you haven't noticed, the criminal justice system is running your life rather than this community running the criminal justice system. You know, when slavery ended, black folks were about twice as likely to be incarcerated as white folks. When the civil rights movement ended, black folks were about twice as likely as white folks to be incarcerated. And here we are today, and we're five times as likely. We're five times as likely. So that young man who's afraid of going to prison, maybe been there before, you explain to him, son, you can't pick who the sheriff is unless you're registered to vote. You can't sit on a jury unless you're registered to vote. You can't pick the boss of the police chief unless you're registered to vote. So let us go home. Let us build a movement to save our sons. And let us get everybody registered to vote, because it's time for us to be in charge of the justice system rather than this injustice system being in charge of us. Thank you and God bless.
And that the sound overnight in Sanford, Florida, of a rally attended by thousands and addressed by, among others, Rosalind Brock, the chair of the board of the NAACP, as well as that organization's president, Benjamin Jealous. This is 5 o'clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, and there is yet another development in the case. One of the defenses of George Zimmerman is that he claimed that he was in pain and that he was screaming, shouting, crying for help in the putative encounter between himself and Trayvon Martin. But that story took a fall today with the release of acoustic evidence indicating that the voice screaming in the background was not George Zimmerman. That is according to a court-qualified acoustic analyst, a forensic voice identifier, by the name of Tom Owen. He is an expert witness as well as the former chief engineer for the public library here in New York City, in the Rodgers and Hammerstein Archives of Recorded Sound. He also specializes in biometrics, and he said that he used Easy Voice biometrics software and other techniques to analyze the voice of who is that screaming, calling for help in the background during the 9/11 calls proximate to the killing of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman. He says that he edited the sound and took only the screams and compared that with the 9/11 recorded voice of George Zimmerman. And he said that there was a less than 50% chance that it was him. He said that the particular program measured a 48% match. But in the tradition of acoustic forensics in court testimony and in prior cases, that should have been 90%. It was not. It was less than half of, it was approximately half of that. And Owen says, quoting, as a result of that, you can say with reasonable scientific certainty that it is not Zimmerman. He said that the samples did not indicate whether or not it was Trayvon Martin, but that they certainly indicate that it was not George Zimmerman. One of the calls made by a woman to 9/11 during this incident begins with the sound of that screaming, and we're going to hear that with specific phone numbers, names, and addresses redacted.
911, do you need police, fire, medical? Maybe both. I'm not sure. There's just someone screaming outside.
Okay, what's the address that they're near? Okay, and is it a male or female?
It sounds like a male.
And you don't know why?
I don't know why. I think they're yelling help, but I don't know. Just send someone quick. Say stop.
Okay. Does he look hurt to you?
I can't see him. I don't want to go out there. I don't know what's going on. So they're sending.
So you think he's yelling help?
Yes.
All right. What is your phone number?
There's gunshots.
You just heard gunshots?
Yes.
How many?
This one. Jeremy, get down. No, come here.
Is he no longer yelling?
No one, I don't know. Jeremy, get in here now. Jeremy, get up here.
All right, is he right outside?
Yeah, pretty much out the back, yeah.
Is he in front of it or behind that address?
He's behind my house.
Okay.
Just stay away from the windows.
I don't hear him yelling anymore. Do you hear anything?
No, I don't, because I'm hiding upstairs. There was a gunshot right outside our house. I mean, you've obviously sent someone already, right?
Yes, it's in dispatch. What's your name and phone number?
My name is... My phone number is...
How do you spell your last name? Okay. Now, do you hear any vehicles leaving or anyone else? Do you hear anything right
There's
now?
People yelling out there, but I don't want to go down there, so...
Okay, multiple people are yelling now?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we do have officers on the way. Just call us back if you do hear or see anything else suspicious, like any vehicles leaving or anything like that, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
The sound of a 911 emergency call to the Sanford police, and if you listened carefully, you could hear someone crying plaintively. And midway during that 911 conversation, you hear a gunshot, after which the crying stops. This is 5 o'clock shadow. And there are similar calls for federal investigation into the killing of black youth taking place and unfolding as we speak in the city of Chicago, where 22-year-old Rakiah Boyd was shot dead by an off-duty police officer in a park in that city. According to reports, it was Tuesday evening into Wednesday morning in Chicago, where, according to police, an off-duty detective asked some kids outside the window of his car to not make so much noise. The incident happened at Douglas Park, and the police claimed that the off-duty detective began shooting into the crowd, where he wounded one young man and fatally wounded 22-year-old Rakiah Boyd. She died of a gunshot wound to the head. The police union is claiming that the wrist-wounded suspect was drawing a gun. But everyone at the scene says that that is not true, that there was no gun. This is 5 o'clock shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. We'll be back with more after this.
Hey, Trayvon. I know you up in heaven right now walking on gold, little bruh. And I know you so proud, man, of how strong your family is, homie. I know you is. I just want to tell you something, little bruh.
You'll forever live on.
I never thought wearing no hoodie, could cause you your life. And I never thought you can just kill somebody and get out the same night. Every dog that you see that ball. Don't mean that he bite. And everything that's black ain't even, everything that's pure ain't white. Cause you think that I'm doing wrong, don't mean that you right. Cause the ones that you think that won't, them the ones that might.
Christian work is how they value your life. Your life. I can do all things through Christ, Christ. Who strengthens me. Me. And even when I pray for my enemies. And Pac said it best, only God can judge me. Judge me. Trayvon, I want you to know, love, homie, you really touch me.
You'll forever live on.
Live on.
Sometimes you're trying to get justice. Sometimes it takes so long. But the ones they supposed to keep in, then the ones they let go home. But the ones that hustle and survive, then the ones they hold with no bond. My son's supposed to bear me, but I ain't supposed to bear my son. You can call me nigga all you want, but she ain't supposed to treat me like one. Supposed to be able to express myself, and to be able to dress like I want. Supposed to be able to go where I please, and to be able to leave when I'm done. What's wrong is wrong.
What's wrong is wrong.
Trayvon Martin,
Trayvon.
You'll forever live on.
Live on.
You'll forever live on.
Live on.
Trayvon, I heard you was a little beast on that football field, too. I heard you was a beast with it now. But now you get to play on the gold football field, homie. All gold. With a solid gold football. Solid gold. With wings on your back. Yeah. I know they can't see you now, little homie. I know they can't. But I just want to let you know. Want to let you know. You'll forever live on, homie.
You'll forever live on.
Live on.
Forever live on.
Live on.
You'll forever live on.
Live on.
Forever live on.
Live on.
You'll 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 forever live on.
This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. We turn now to the international scene, where we are joined by intelligence analyst Ray McGovern. He is with Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And we congratulate you, Ray, on your website that is new and very much up to date at raymcgovern.com. And Ray, what we're concerned about are clandestine activities that could become military in Iran, among other places. And I thought that might be a good place to start, because each day we are barraged with what a threat is represented by that country, and third-party nations may well be provoking us into a war. What is your assessment of that?
Well, there have been a number of incidents, including the killings of five Iranian scientists. These are meant to show that foreign countries have the ability to stir up all kinds of trouble. The most egregious incident of that came in October of 2009, and it's worth mentioning because it had to do with the Iranian nuclear program and the Iranian agreement after President Obama came into office to allow between two-thirds and three-quarters of its low-enriched uranium to go out of country, out of its control, to be refined to a higher grade to fuel its medical reactor, you know, the kind that helps you have a CT scan and that kind of thing. So what happened in that incident was really very pivotal, because here was Obama, new in office. He sent the second number two of the State Department to Geneva, and they presented to the Iranians an arrangement that that they knew, in quotes, Iran would never agree to. And that arrangement said, look, you need the low-enriched uranium enriched to 20% so that you can fuel your medical reactor in Tehran, will do that if you ship out two-thirds to three-quarters of your low-enriched uranium out of country. Now, your listeners need to know why that is so significant. You see, to do a nuclear bomb, you need high-enriched uranium. And the way you get high-enriched uranium is to have a whole bunch of low-enriched uranium that you can refine to a higher enrichment. And so here was Iran, willing to forego two-thirds to three-quarters of its low-enriched uranium out of the country to get power for its nuclear medicine reactor. Now, what happened? Well, this ties it back into terrorism. There was a terrorist organization called Shangola. And my friends on the other side of CIA, the operations side, have said that the U.S., Israel, even Pakistan has supported these terrorists. Now, mind you, these are good terrorists. They're not the bad terrorists. These are good terrorists that we in Israel and Pakistan were supporting. Well, in October of 2009, one day before the Iranians were going to go to Vienna to start signing the documents providing for three-quarters to two-thirds of their low-enriched uranium to go out of country, Jandala, by some strange alchemy, had this incredible intelligence pinpointing where five Revolutionary Guards, Iranian Revolutionary Guards generals were, and many captains and colonels and majors and so forth. What they did was blow them up. Five. Count them. Five Revolutionary Guards generals, including the deputy commander of the ground forces. And they did away with a lot of the colonels and so forth. Now, when that happened, the Revolutionary Guards, which, you know, the premier force there in Iran, went to Khamenei, the supreme leader, and said, you're going to go to Vienna and negotiate with these perfidious Westerners, and they just blew up five of our generals? Give me a break. And Khamenei said, yeah, you're right. So we sent a lower-level representative, and they backtracked on some of the things they had agreed to in Geneva, and the deal fell through. What's the point of all that? Well, terrorism is in the eye of the beholder. In this case, the so-called good terrorists sabotaged an agreement that had been agreed to in principle on the 1st of October in Geneva by the Iranians, sabotaged that agreement by when they went back on the 19th to Vienna. They had no incentive and they had no approval from Khamenei, the supreme leader, or the other factions in the Iranian government to go through with this deal. That was key. Just think, two-thirds to three-quarters of their low-enriched uranium. So the bottom line there is that Israel is far less concerned about Iran getting a nuclear weapon than they give everyone to believe.
We're speaking with former CIA officer, presidential briefer, and member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, Ray McGovern. And Ray, you speak about sabotage and assassination programs and terrorism, as it were, particularly for those who are scholarly in science, in particular chemistry, physics, and nuclear affairs. Now, this reminds me quite a bit of what the nation of Israel did to some Iraqi nuclear scientists. One of them was assassinated in Paris, according to Viktor Ostrovsky, formerly of Mossad. All of this in conjunction with the military attack on the Osirak refinery that was being built. And is this a characteristic? Are there more people disappearing beneath our notice? Is this kind of an assassination unprecedented or ongoing?
Well, we know that five Iraqi scientists, one most recently about 2.5 months ago, if memory serves, were assassinated by these little bombs they stick on cars in the middle of heavy traffic in Tehran and blow the car up and kill the scientist. The Israelis, their official reaction was by the deputy chief of staff, we shed no tears for Iranian scientists. Now, that one, it's pretty clear, was done without any coordination with the United States. Because even Hillary Clinton got up and said, you know, we don't condone that. We think that's really bad, what they just did. Now, that's a slap on the wrist. The Israelis have successfully impeded the Iranian nuclear program by putting computer worms into their centrifuges. And they've been successful in causing all kinds of havoc in this program. But what your listeners and everyone else need to know is simply this, that Iran is not working on a nuclear weapon. I'll say that one more time. Iran is not working on a nuclear weapon. Now, you don't have to believe McGovern for that. Leon Panetta, our Secretary of Defense, on the 8th of January, in an interview on Face the Nation, he clearly had asked Bob Schieffer, hey, ask me about whether Iran's working on a nuclear weapon, will you? And that's the way these things work, you know, in the green room before the interview. And Schieffer chickened out. And so you can see Panetta looking up at the clock, 5 minutes left here. And so out of the blue, he says, is Iran working on a nuclear weapon? No. Wow. 10 days later, and this is something that has not been given much publicity at all, his counterpart in the Israeli government, Defense Minister Ehud Barak, was interviewed by Israeli Armed Forces Radio. This was on the 18th of January. Now, the interviewer said, does your intelligence coincide with what the Americans are saying, namely that Iran has not yet decided to build a nuclear weapon? And Ehud Barak, the Israeli defense minister, said, yes. Next question. Well, Mr. Defense Minister, How soon could Iran get a nuclear weapon if it started working on one? And you know what Barak said? He says, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Look, they can't do any of this as long as the UN inspectors are there. Now, if they kick out the UN inspectors, then please come back and ask me that question. I'll give you an educated guess. But they're not going to do anything without kicking out the UN inspectors. That will be the signal. So they're not working on a nuclear weapon now. We will know quite in a timely fashion when and if they are going to start working on a nuclear weapon, because they will have to throw out the UN inspectors. Wow. Now, you wouldn't know any of that from reading the mainstream media or listening to Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister. They keep saying, oh, we have to stop the uranium program. Well, stop it. There is no active Iranian program to develop a nuclear weapon. And both defense ministers, both intelligence setups, and the president himself, President Barack Obama, has said, and I quote, I don't believe the Iranians have decided yet whether they will build a nuclear weapon.
Of course, the IAEA and others, multiple sources are saying that there is no perceptible weapons program in Iran. And yet, Israel itself and its nuclear industry and atomic arsenal is not subject to those same constraints or inspections. What do you make of that?
The Israeli program, you mean?
Yes. How big is
Israel? I'm not sure I heard the question correctly. Or we don't have a really good connection. But if you're speaking to the Israel arsenal, well,
yes,
they have,
indeed,
most people think, between at least 200, probably 300 nuclear weapons deliverable by missile, by sea, by under the sea, and, of course, by aircraft. It stretches the imagination to think that the Israelis would think that one or two nuclear weapons in the hands of Iran would cause a, quote, what they call an existential threat, end quote. And to his credit, the most recent head of the Israeli CIA, they call it Mossad, he has said publicly, look, one or two nuclear weapons in Iran's arsenal does not pose any existential threat to Israel. And others are saying the same thing. So what we have here, Robert, is a bunch of hype. And the hype is very, very pernicious, because it's the same kind of hype that led to the attack on Iraq. This time, the initiative is not with the British or the Americans. This time, the initiative is with the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. It all depends on his reading of how strong a person Barack Obama is. Now, when he met with Barack Obama on the 5th of March, the signs are very clear that Barack Obama said, look, you know, we really would prefer you not to start a war with Iran or to provoke Iran into a war, so please don't do it, okay? Obama,
so we can rule out all the months up to, but not including November?
I'm sorry?
So we can rule out everything before the election?
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. You see, from the Israeli perspective, they are deathly afraid. That is, not all the Israelis. We're talking about the hard right, Netanyahu and his followers. They are deathly afraid that Obama will win a second term. And if he does, he will feel less constrained by the Israel lobby and actually press them very hard, perhaps threatening some curtailment in military and economic aid in order to get the Israelis to be more sensible in negotiating with the Palestinians. Right now, the Israeli-Palestinian issue is dormant, and that's one of the side effects very much wished for by the Israeli government by dusting up this whole charade about the a sensible threat from Iran. There's no attention being paid to that at all. Now, if you look back when Jimmy Carter and the Camp David Accords made some real progress on the Palestinian-Israeli issue, the Israelis were similarly afraid if Carter got a second term that he would lean really hard on them to negotiate in good faith with the Palestinians. And that's why the Israelis did everything they possibly could to make sure that Carter didn't win. That was just one factor in his loss, but it was a potent factor. They're trying to do the same thing now, okay? And as they look at the situation, despite all the things that Obama has said in private to Netanyahu, and I believe he really has tried to dissuade him from attacking Iran in private, I'm sure that when Netanyahu went down back to Tel Aviv and got together with his pals there around the cabinet table, he said, well, you know, Obama came on pretty strong in private, but he wasn't willing to say it publicly. He wasn't willing to come out and simply say, we do not favor an Israeli attack on Iran or Israel provoking an attack from Iran. And so, you know, that's a sign of how impotent he would be were we to just go ahead and start hostilities, because 90% sure he would feel politically constrained to jump in with both feet, despite his admonitions that we not do this. So why don't we try it? This is our last best chance. What's the worst thing that can happen? Well, the world economy would really suffer. Gasoline prices in America would go up to $7 to $8, $9 a gallon. But hey, listen to this. Obama would lose the election.
Is there a possibility, Ray, is there a possibility that Obama could triangulate, and just as he did with NATO in the overthrow of Libya, as the Obama administration has done in many parts of the world, could he not clandestinely share intelligence, targeting, GPS, and other kind of military data with Israel in that they might attack Iran, and the president would claim plausible deniability of this background assistance? Is that in the realm of possibility?
Well, you know, we have a precedent for that. We have the Osirak raid in 1981, where the Israelis did that surgical strike on the fledgling nuclear reactor in Iran, in a place called Osirak. Now, that was an amazing display of aeronautical ability and intelligence and so forth. Where do you think the Israelis got the intelligence to navigate those crevices and deliver their weapons right on target and get back to Israel? Guess where they got that? Well, I won't tell you the complete answer, but I do know the fellow that handled relations with the Israeli military and the Defense Intelligence Agency. And he told me that despite our later disapproval of what Israel did, we were the ones that enabled this precision strike. Okay, there were U.S. aircraft, and it was U.S. Navigation stuff that let it be so successful. So What does that mean for now? Well, the Israelis have, not only overt contacts in the U.S. defense establishment, but a whole host of what we say covert contacts or agents of influence, people in the intelligence apparatus who are loyal as much to Israel as they are to the United States. So if Israel wanted to do that, they could try to do that, but the whole world would know that Israel could not possibly do this kind of thing alone, and that the U.S., whether overtly or surreptitiously, aided and abetted it. So for the whole world, the Arab world, and Iran in particular, they would see no daylight between what the Israelis did and our encouragement.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. That's Ray McGovern. His website is at raymcgovern.com. He's a member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and is a former Central Intelligence Agency officer and presidential briefer. And final question, we have about 5 minutes left, Ray. And that is, how does the fulcrum of Iran relate to the ongoing occupation of Afghanistan and other instabilities in the region?
Well, the short answer on Iran is that contrary to the situation that existed before the attack on Iraq, where the military and the intelligence community and the White House were all hell-bent and giving Saddam Hussein a bloody nose and having a cakewalk into Baghdad, this time the intelligence community is playing it straight, saying that Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapon in 2003 and has not resumed work. The Pentagon is up in arms, and they're warning the president, look, if Netanyahu gets us in a war with Iran, this is going to make Iraq and Afghanistan together look like a volleyball game between Mount St. Ursula and St. Helena's High School. Okay, this is big stuff. Tell them not to do it. Okay, so that's the big difference here. White House, nobody wants to do this. Now, as I said before, that doesn't matter all that much, because what really matters is Netanyahu's view of how he would be able to mousetrap our president once he started hostilities. Now, with respect to Afghanistan, that's such a sad case. We all knew that it would be a Vietnamistan. That's what Dan Ellsberg called it right off the bat. I wrote three years ago that, was a piece that had the title, Welcome to Vietnam, Mr. President. It was a feckless exercise. And let me just address one aspect that an infantry officer like myself would be able to discern, and maybe not too many others. At Fort Benning, and I would think that David Petraeus and other top leaders would have remembered their infantry training at Fort Benning, I learned that you never launched an operation, whether it was squad size, platoon size, or division size, without securing your locks, okay? Now, I'm from New York, too, and I'm not talking about bagels and locks. I'm talking about lines of communication and supply. You never get into any kind of battle, much less a war, unless you have secure lines of communication and supply. Now, where's Afghanistan? You can't get to Afghanistan from here.
You can't get there.
And the Pakistanis have cut us off. So the war is over. Mm-hmm. There's no way we can resupply our troops through.
And even coming in from the north would be ridiculously expensive in terms of energy, fuel, cost, time, transportation.
Yeah, it already costs $800 a gallon to get a gallon of gasoline into a marine tank down in Afghanistan.
Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it, Ray.
Yeah, it's a matter of time.
Mm. Ray McGovern is a former Central Intelligence officer. He has, for multiple presidents, been a daily briefer on the security and intelligence situation, and he is with Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And his most recent work can be had at his website, raymcgovern.com. And when we meet again, Ray, we'll be going deeper into Afghanistan, I hope. Rhetorically,
thank you,
not
Robert.
Literally.
I hope we maybe I hope maybe a reality will dawn on folks and we'll be out of there or on our way out next time we talk.
Very good. Thank you. Ray McGovern. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow, the program engineered today by Michael G. Haskins and produced with Thiago Prozo. And I'm Robert Knight, asking you to send us your comments, leaks, tips, questions, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org.
I have a dream. A nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Everybody has their choices to make. One right and one wrong. Either you do or you don't. Two warring nations, can't they both coexist? To live and let live, nobody wants to give in. Still you fight for first position, you scream, but no one listens. Refuse to play the victim, you don't care who gets hurt. Each day brings brand new questions, who wins? It's all subjective, you're searching for the answers that you need to know. Like, how many times can a man keep running? Some people listen and some people hear. Some answer the call, some are prisoners to fear. If there's a lesson that we can't seem to learn, it's you don't play with fire, not expect to get burned. So dig deep to find the meaning. Rethink what you believe in. What's odd will become even once the tables are turned. Each day brings brand new questions. Who wins? It's all subjective.